Welcome to Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Joe Cook, got Eric Naline. We're bringing you the latest from the Longhorns' first few practices of preseason camp, and we have a very special offer to talk about. Make sure you head to Inside Texas, join for just $1. Your first week is only $1. And if you do that, your Inside Texas membership will give you access to a complimentary year of The Athletic. So get Inside Texas for $1 for your first week. And as a bonus, your membership includes a complimentary year of The Athletic. You'll also get all the best Inside Texas has to offer. That's recruiting updates. That's the latest team info. That's coverage as Texas approaches its first scrimmage of the preseason and continued coverage of Texas Longhorns training camp as the countdown to kickoff to the Ohio State game continues. And make sure you buy our guy Paul Wadlington's Thinking Texas Football full preview. Every position, every player, every opponent on the schedule, every SEC team. And Eric Naline has a look at the 2025 recruiting class. Some of those guys we'll be talking about today. So to go over what we're talking about today, new name to know at that star position, the latest on Ryan Wingo and DJ Campbell, CJ Baxter already being ahead of schedule, and some standouts from both sides of the ball from some early practices. Eric Starr has been kind of the big discussion point because of Grayson Littleton going from true freshman early enrollee to first string guy. But there's been another very notable player, and I think it's important to say he's been taking reps at Starr. It doesn't mean he's the guy, but they're trying a lot of different things and a lot of different names at Starr.
Yeah, kind of an old name at Starr. Michael Tapp has been the longest tenured player in the program. And he actually made his name early in his time at Texas by being able to play star at a pretty high level, making plays in practice. We were hearing about him early on as not looking like a walk-on. So he's played this position before. He's there now. He's played it quite a bit in the first three practices. You know, this is in the closed portion, not there when the media is out there lurking around. He's getting a lot of reps now. You can tell that they want an experienced, steady hand there. While they bring Grayson Littleton and Wardell Mack around. I think September's probably the better time to do that with the younger players, and I think they're looking for a veteran that they could play there against Ohio State. Now, we'll see if it maintains like this. Obviously, you know, I don't think Taft came back to play star. He's second-team All-American safety, but he's also a very selfless player. I think he could probably communicate from there. It's usually not ideal. Normally that guy comes from the back end, but they've got enough experience around him to where communication might not be as big of an issue as it was in years past. We'll see if this holds to form, but right now he's playing there a lot. And I should note, when he's at safety, usually with Jelani. When he goes to star, it's Jelani with a mix of Derek Williams, Jordan Johnson-Rebell, and Xavier Filsimi.
Do you see this more as kind of preseason tinkering until it isn't, or how are you kind of looking at this?
I think it might be a mix of both. I do think they want that veteran presence that they can plug and play there when needed. Obviously, versus San Jose State, UTEP, and Sam Houston, they could probably get away with Grayson Littleton there, no problem. Wardell Mack there, no problem. Right now, I think they are trying to figure out the best way to go about it. I think they originally wanted Jelani McDonald there. That doesn't sound like it's been in the cards of late. Maybe that changes later in camp. Maybe it changed today or changes tomorrow. We don't know. That's why we have to keep tracking these things. But, you know, when they moved the star room into the safety room, that was kind of a light bulb moment that, okay, a safety playing there is definitely real. It's just a matter of who's it going to be.
And I think with Taft, you know, everybody knows he was a corner at Westlake, picked off Quinn twice. So he's definitely got coverage ability. This is a position that asks for a significant amount of coverage. And I think if Texas kind of continues to be a three or a single high team, you see the boundary safety and the star rotate enough to where maybe Taft moves back and whoever's at boundary safety rotates down. So it's not like it's a position or an area, as you've mentioned, where he's unfamiliar or a role he's unfamiliar with. But him being there full time would be a little bit different than what we may have come to expect entering the season.
Yeah, he's not going to have the man coverage skills that Jalen Gilbo had last year, certainly not Jadae Barron, but he's going to be able to do some of the things that Barron did. That 2022 year when Barron had an absurd amount of tackles behind the line of scrimmage, blowing up screens and run plays. I could see Taft, you know, raising hell in that way. If he's matched up against a speedier slot, that might be a little bit tougher for him, even though I think he does have really good short area quickness. We'll see. He's got the intelligence for it. And we should note that Dwayne Aquino really likes to play matchups. So when you hear that, you know that there's going to be a lot of different body types that get looks there. So it's not, you know, it's not going to be a one size fits all. It doesn't, at least it doesn't sound like. But when you play matchups, you're going to have different skill sets, different types of bodies, different types of athletes. And, you know, when they want to, if they're going to play a run heavier team, you might want Taft there instead of Grayson Littleton.
Let's keep going. Talk about some of the guys who their practice status was not in question, but they weren't at practice when we had a chance to view it on Thursday. Ryan Wingo was out. Justin Wells broke that news over on Inside Texas. We also didn't see DJ Campbell there at right guard. Any big reason for concern here? I think the program called it personal reasons. I know in the era of NIL, it may sound like, oh, they're holding out. And, you know, whether you're a Bengals fan or whether you're looking at some other or a Tennessee fan, you know what holding out looks like. This is a far cry from that, it sounds like. And just, you know, kind of going through some early rigors of camp, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, personal reasons could be anything. This day and age, when I hear personal reasons, you hear so you think of something like depression or something. That's certainly not it with those guys. So, you know, they weren't back on Friday. I know that somebody said that they were, but they might have attended practice, but they weren't actually practicing, which there's a major difference there. Saturday, as we film this Sunday morning, I haven't heard whether or not they participated Saturday. We reported that Wingo was unlikely and probably expected back Monday. I'm not 100% sure on Campbell. I would assume that they're in the same boat, pretty much the same time of return. But that's just a guess. But Wingo is expected back on Monday. There's nothing really to worry about long term. Both guys need to have a good camp, right? They're two of probably the 10 most important players in the entire program. When you talk about, you know, having to have the offensive line humming, and they need they need some leadership. DJ Campbell stepped up and sort of filled some of those voids created by losing four guys. Ryan Wingo has got to be a pretty much dominating force this season for Texas to achieve its goals. You know, Archman needs a deep threat. The team needs a, you know, you saw what Jeremiah Smith did for Ohio State last year. We all saw what Ryan Williams in his freshman year was able to do for that passing attack in Alabama. Texas needs a player like that. Wingo has a talent, so he can't afford to miss too many practices. But right now I'm not concerned. We'll track it. I'll probably know today in a couple hours whether or not either participated last night. Again, we don't think Wingo did, but we're not so sure on Campbell.
As far as the guys that stepped up, we got to see a look at maybe what happens on the offensive line and at wide receiver. I think we expected Parker Livingstone being that fourth guy to step into that role. But as far as Campbell goes, that went that moved Cole Hudson over to right guard and then brought Connor Robertson up to center. Any thoughts on that? As Connor Robertson's been a name that we've thought, hey, if he's able to get to a certain level, maybe that changes how the interior looks.
Yeah, well, I go back to Livingston. Livingston's been running with the first team all week, as far as we know. So this was a chance for Emmett Mosley to come in and play for Wingo, who had been backing up Wingo. Livingston's looked really good. Mosley, good route runner. I don't know. I tend to think that Livingston has a higher upside than Mosley, but Mosley does a lot of the softer things that might be harder to discern with the naked eye to the regular fan that comes up on tape coaches like. As far as O-line, yeah, you know, Connor Robertson, we've been hearing for the last, you know, 8 months, maybe even before that he looks like he's playable. Like they can go – it's a whole lot different than when we saw him playing against OU when he was thrown to the wolves when Jake Majors was hurt. In that tragic loss, he's come a long way. And yeah, you can always move Cole Hudson. Cole Hudson's played right guard a ton. That's been his main position since he arrived on campus. He started 13 games, I believe, as a true freshman. So that's certainly something they can look at. I think, you know, given how they like to prioritize playing veterans and experience, you would think that they could go with Connor Robertson at center and Cole Hudson at right guard and not drop off too much.
Before we keep going, got to show some love to our sponsor, that is Academy Sports and Outdoors.
All right, who's ready?
I'm open.
We'll keep going talking about some running backs, and that is CJ Baxter. And I think there's a sense of when you see CJ Baxter just on the field, there's a little bit of a celebration and knowing that, hey, he's worked hard to get to where he's at, to be at practice. You know, there are some players who take years to recover from the injuries that he sustained. But not only is he going through practice, he's doing some great things there too.
Yeah, he looks good. You know, outside he's wearing a cumbersome knee brace, of course. You know, that's to be expected. And he's added weight. He looks just so much different than any of the other running backs out there. So you have to kind of compartmentalize when you watch him and say, okay, this is actually a 230-pound man, and not one of these, you know, 5'11", 205-pound guys. So, you know, he's not going to move like Christian Clark. That's just not. If he moved like Christian Clark, we'd be talking about a Hall of Fame talent here. But he moves well for his size, his added size, and coming back for a knee injury. We will say he's ahead of schedule. We have people that say, yeah, he can play against Ohio State, or at least they expect him to be able to play against Ohio State in the opener August 30th, later this month. Now, that doesn't mean he's 100%. We've heard he's at 90%, but he looks good. And again, this is not coming from what we saw in open practice. This is what we're hearing about coming off of some thud practices. And again, thud practice at Texas, it's pretty damn physical. They're not tackling to the ground, but they're popping up top. And he looks pretty good, running with good power and pretty decisive.
This one is always going to be an interesting one just because of the perceived change to, or not change, but the addition of more gap schemes. But no matter what, and we heard Kyle Flood talk about this the other day, it's not like they're going to go like 70-30 in a wide direction. CJ Baxter still needs to be able to figure out his zone targets and things like that. Yeah. But what did you take from the fact that I think Sarkisian said that CJ Baxter was the one that addressed the team on, I guess it would be Tuesday night, right before the first practice. It wasn't Arch. It wasn't on the offense, at least. It wasn't Arch. It wasn't someone like Trevor Goosby, DJ Campbell. It was CJ Baxter who stood up and was like trying to tell people what was expected from them during camp.
Yeah. I go back to what we were writing in the during the summer, where, you know, Trey Wisner was kind of like the Rashawn Johnson, and Baxter kind of assumed that Bijan Robinson role. That type of leader, sort of inspirational sort of guy. That's a takeaway there. You know, the team respects him. The team loves him. The team is pulling for him after the injury last year. He's a likable guy. He's a driven guy. He's got a pretty it's amazing where he's come, given his backstory, his upbringing, not the easiest upbringing. So everybody's cheering for him, and that's going to be a guy that you listen to. But he's also paid his dues. Everybody's seen how hard that he's rehabilitated. They see the type of shape he's in, how far he's come in such a short time relative to the injury. And he makes for a great person to do that. But, yeah, he does have those leadership intangibles. He's got a good story to pitch these guys. Hey, man, if I'm out here giving it my all after what happened last August, then I expect the same out of everybody else. And, you know, Sark has always had a soft spot for this guy. Remember, he was going to start ahead of Jonathan Brooks, which, you know, really caught us by surprise. And then, you know, he got hurt. Brooks went off. And we're all thinking, yeah, that Brooks kind of seemed like the best running back. Sark has a clear soft spot for Baxter, but also I think it's part of that is that he fits the scheme and what they're trying to do. And as far as running inside zone, yeah, he struggled with that his freshman year. He was making great strides in the spring. He was making good strides early in August before he got hurt. They feel he's a lot more comfortable in zone than he was as a freshman. But yeah, we're probably expecting him to be a little bit more comfortable in gap schemes. That's really how he's made his name as a recruit. But right now, yeah, I'm sticking with what I've said about it's going to be a buildup for him. Sark is playing the long game. Sark wants this guy in January, dropping the hammer on people in the fourth quarter. But he can play against Ohio State. We feel confident about that. And the way he's getting reps in practice right now, where it's sort of a 1A, 1B with Wisner, we expect him to play. You know, we wouldn't be surprised by him playing quite a bit, just given the level of reps he's already getting.
Last but not least, some standouts from some early practices on both sides of the ball, plus some other notes. You identified a linebacker and a non-Arch Manning quarterback as guys who had some good days early.
Yeah, well, Arch has had a good spring block, a good August practice session already, or it's July, I guess. Whatever, man. We need to come up with some uniform name for what
happened. Preseason camp, I'm telling you.
Preseason works, yeah. I might just have to go with preseason. I don't know. Fall camp just goes back to, you know, that's there's a romanticized fall camp notion of, you know, the leaves turning and all that. But we're in August. It's August 3rd. Trey Owens had a good practice. This is coming from Friday night. We're still going to get notes from Saturday night. We're filming this Sunday morning. He had a good practice, was really accurate, decisive with the ball. You know, Sark challenged him when they brought in Matthew Caldwell. Hey, we're bringing in this veteran, but, you know, you go win that backup job. And, you know, Trey's never backed down from that. He seems like he's rising to the occasion. Of course, he has all the arm talent. It's just going to be about processing speed, getting the ball out quick. If he does that, it might not be set in stone that Caldwell will be the backup. And then the defensive guy we heard about, Leonard LaFalle, looks just really good in zone coverage. They said it's like having an extra DB out there when Leonga's dropping in the zone. Very smart, uses his eyes well, communicates with the secondary well, just on the same page with everybody. And again, it's like having another DB out there. So I'm thinking he might have four picks like Jalen Ford had what was that, 2023. Don't be surprised when Leonga gets his hands on a lot of footballs this year.
Do you think that kind of dynamic with a, I don't want to say thumper, because at Mike you want Anthony Hill, but you want these multifaceted guys just who can go forwards and backwards, but at Will, maybe you want that, okay, you're a little bit more coverage heavy, and then at Mike, okay, you're a little bit more downhill centric, because we've seen that with, like you mentioned, Ford and Overshown. Ford and Hill did that a little bit because of some simplicity at Will. Now with Ford or with Hill and LaFalle, you know, one's strengths are a little bit different than the other. Do you think that's something we'll see going forward? Because there's that Ty Anthony Smith, there's Bo Barnes, there's linebackers who look kind of like these two do. Do you think that's a dynamic that we'll see going forward?
Well, Hill still has to cover a lot of space, and he's got to have to work on it, continue to work on his drops. And there's no doubt about that. I think what they like Leonga in these situations is it allows them to blitz Hill. You know, obviously Hill's one of your best pass rushers on the entire team, so you want him playing downhill in passing situations. At the same time, you have to have the coverage in the back end to match it. I think they play off each other very well, but at the same time, I'm expecting Anthony Hill to look a lot better in coverage than he has in the past, and I think Leonga LaFalle is going to play the run better, certainly, than he did his first couple games of significant playing time last year. But I think they're both multifaceted linebackers. Yes, their strength lean in one direction more so than the other. But Leong is still a physical downhill player, and Anthony Hill still has all the athleticism necessary to play in reverse. So, well, I think they complement each other very well. And yes, they do have a little bit differing skill sets.
Today's Sunday. They're off today, right? And then full pads tomorrow, starting a big week of practice leading up to the first real scrimmage on Saturday, correct?
I don't know if they're full pads tomorrow. I do know that they have been pads the last couple practices. They are off today. Today, when they say off, they're probably still going up, getting treatment and all that for their first their reintroduction to football. There'll be some bumps and bruises to attend to. I'm not sure if they're full pads tomorrow, but I'll have that. You know, I should have another report based on last night up today on Inside Texas.
Should be good to read. And of course, if you're not a member of Inside Texas yet, join for $1. Join now for $1 in your first for your first week. Enjoy a complimentary year of The Athletic included with your membership. But with Inside Texas, you get the best Texas Longhorns football coverage, Eric's insider practice reports, complete recruiting coverage, complete coverage of anything players, coaches, and the like say. And whatever we're able to see when the program offers windows, we'll have that too. So $1 to join Inside Texas gets you a free week. You're going to want to stick around after that. And, of course, make sure buy our guy Paul Wadlington's Thinking Texas Football 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus. Every position, every player, every team on the schedule, every SEC member. And, of course, not only just a look at the college football landscape, but a look at Texas landscape with the class of 2025, number one ranked now on the roster. Eric, you do a great job of explaining where some of those members may fit, special teams, maybe cracking depth, and maybe in the case of Grayson Littleton and others, competing for some first string snaps. So always a great read before the season. Eric, thank you so much. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time on Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.